Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, where we connect with educators from across the globe who are creating a better future for learning and educating now by implementing bold ideas and fostering a sense of curiosity, creativity, and possibility.
Hello, and welcome to Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast. I'm your co-host, Joshua Faden, here alongside my co-host, Michael Carson.
Hi, everyone.
Today, we are joined by Michelle Kornfeld. Michelle Kornfeld is an amazing founder of Raising Creative Thinkers. She's a lifelong creativity educator. She is also the author of creative thinking books, specifically focused around topics on STEAM. And we are very honored and thrilled to have her join us all the way from Tel Aviv, Israel. So hello, Michelle, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you.
So Michelle, just to get started, tell us how you're filling your days and what kind of is giving you the most energy and optimism currently.
I'm on social media, offering my tools and materials to teachers. And I have developed them throughout years and researched. And now that there is an openness and I see that to help teachers with current challenges, it is the most rewarding and rewarding thing that gives me a lot of motivation to continue.
Love it. So tell us a little bit about those tools that you alluded to and the work that you're doing specifically with those tools.
Well, for now, I offer a mini course to stimulate and to energize teachers, but also parents and grandparents. People can use that as educators, but specifically for teachers. And it's based on my art and my literature and my lifelong experience, but it is a very simple and engaging online workshop, just 3 hours. And it's meant to give the feeling that we can do it. We're on our way with our challenges. We have a plan. We're going to do it. We feel that we can do it. And I just led a workshop that is the basis of this course. And at the end, the participant said, I now feel hopeful, and that was for me the best thing.
I love that. I think that that's kind of always the goal of our work, is to provide hope for people. And I know for you, you know, we've been calling this kind of our education origin story. And so to get to these workshops and to get to the work that you're doing as an artist, as an author, can you tell us just a little bit about your story, though, and where you've come to get to this place?
So this is my life journey. I began studying a course about travel instruction here in Israel, and that was a very experiential, engaging, and multidisciplinary course. We traveled a lot and studied all that is important to know for every person here in Israel or person who visits Israel, all that you haven't learned in school. And it was an eye-opener, but also a concept changer. We learned about the embroidery of cultures in Israel. There's so many interesting people. And we learned to honor each with their and values. And we learned a lot about animals and nature in Israel. And later I began to work in preschools and kindergartens. I grew with the children and I brought animals to preschools and kindergartens and introduced them and taught about them. And even then, I didn't use the materials I was given. I studied and I created my own learning materials. And they told me back then that there were classes that were very difficult classes. And they told me, Michelle, only you can work with the children. And I told them that is because I treat them as little adults. I stimulate their intellect. I see them as little intellectuals. And then I was always well prepared, and there was always something to wait for in the end of the lesson. After raising my daughters, I worked at the Man in the Living World Museum. And there again, I was telling stories and introducing nature. And they have had also all sorts of animals, but also special animals. So I didn't find stories about them. I began to write stories, to research and to write those stories. And at some point they came and told me, Michelle, you only tell stories that you write. It was working. And I needed teaching aids to tell my stories. So I started drawing little things and the kids liked what I drew. For 20 years, I said, I can't draw and paint and I will never be able to. But the kids liked what I did. And I told that to my mom. So she said, go study painting so you can draw them coloring pages. And it was like a wave washed over me. For 4 years, I painted all the time. And I began to envision a book and I began to paint my stories and poems. And I used that when I was talking with children. We watched a painting and started to think, what is today's story going to be about? We started with imagining and visualizations. And after a while, my daughter was invited to an interview in the Dr. Erika Landau Institute for Creativity and Excellence in Tel Aviv. And she was telling about the presentations she does with me. And immediately they told me, you have to work here. And we met Dr. Erika, and she said, you already have literature and art, stories, nature, environment. Now add science. So the next family dinner, I sat with my uncle. He's Dr. Michel Richbon. He established the Clough Garden of Science and the Science-Oriented Youth Department in the Weizmann Institute. This is a pioneer program in science education and the leader of that field worldwide. And I sat with him and I showed him my paintings and I asked him, what do you see? And it was amazing. Where I saw stars, he saw soap bubbles. And he started talking with me about symmetry. And I learned new stuff about my paintings and my literature. And we started to weave curiosity for science activities and lessons into my materials. And by the end of that semester, I realized that I have developed a method that every teacher can use for every child to teach creative thinking. It's actually STEAM education. That's weaving science, technology, art. what's good about it is that it is STEAM for elementary school, for language art lessons, because usually STEAM is for middle schools and they're talking about projects and design, but here we can weave it into learning language, rich language. And then I began to summarize it all in my book, Creative Children Like the Animals of the World. It took 4 years and now it's available on Amazon and people use it. So on the cover page of the book, the child signs next to me and becomes co-author and co-illustrator because my stories and poems and art are just there to inspire the kids to write in their own ideas, to draw freely inside. And then a teacher or a parent can mold this into creative thinking, into social emotional learning, into thinking skills.
Thank you, Michelle. And I love that. And I just wanted to share, it reminds me, I was reading yesterday about brain development in younger children in school.
And storytelling is such a huge part of reaching children and helping them grow and see new things. And I'm curious, I loved what you're saying about how you just kind of naturally treat children as though they're mini adults in terms of their ability to be creative and understand things. And I'm just curious if you could speak a little bit more on that. And just even if, you know, there are some things that you can recall that were just surprised you about what children were able to come up with, what you were maybe not expecting, but by kind of leaving them room, by treating them like little adults, you kind of, you know, something came out of that you couldn't have expected.
Well, I saw children, this is actually what drives me until today. My students at the Dr. Erika Landau Institute, they were amazing with the insights they came up with and ideas and the way we were able to converse. But that was also because I listened to them. I opened and I gave time for just conversing, time to mold all that we heard in the story and turn it into social emotional skills. But I saw the same reactions at regular classes. And sometimes a kid would have a eureka moment and the teacher would be a bit confused because that child was labeled as lazy years ago. It happened to me a lot. And I also had great reactions in special education schools with youth. And those were kids that amazing efforts are being done to teach them numbers and letters. But if you converse with them, you see such creative thinking, philosophy.
I think that's really, go on.
I wanted to tell also about my daughters, how they were part of creating my stories. They were little when I wrote my stories. And for example, we drove for a Friday night dinner at my mom's, and I would tell them on the way, I need to write a story about an ant and an elephant. And my elder daughter immediately told a 1-hour story. And my younger daughter, she was maybe 2-3 years old, she said, the ant, she should be like, she gave me her character. So I believe children are born storytellers. The thing is, we don't really listen to that because they blubber all the time. And that's a problem because later we spend years trying to teach them to write stories. So, I believe in listening when they're young. When my daughter was young, she was telling me a story. I just tried to type it all because it was just ideas going away.
I think that's exactly what it's about, right? It's finding the spark within each of our students, within each of our children, and helping to bring that out. And so I know that's an important thing for you is bringing out those sparks, those gifts that the students have. Can you talk a little bit about what that process is like for you and what you find when you bring out that spark, generally speaking, and across the board with students?
So I summed up, when I wrote the Raising Creative Thinkers guidebook, I saw that five E words were repeating themselves all the time. And I later summed it up into the five E's method, which is very simple. So first we explore. I did it by telling a story, by showing art, but it can even be done by a short lecture. And then experiential learning, conversing, doing a science experiment, role-playing, drawing, coloring, and those things we're quite familiar with, but they are just the basics. And they need to be stimulating curiosity. engaging and more in a more engaging way than introducing learner material is done today. But they're just the basis, because education needs to move forward to the next phase, and that is examine, elevate, and express. Examine the ideas the kids came up with, because during conversation and coloring, they start coming up with ideas. It's natural, it's innate. And then we as educators need to examine, check them out, and elevate, recommend how to take them to the next phase and make them into educational products, and express, invite the kids to present their products. And that way we can start seeing what the kids' gifts are, what their individual potential, what were the ideas that came up they found interesting about the learning material. So we learn about them.
I love that.
Learning about the individual potential of kids, it's a process mm-hmm. that we need to do all the time as teachers, as parents, and keep thinking how to direct them to fulfill those gifts. That, I think, is the key to equity. Because if each child would find himself in the adult world successful based on his gifts, then they have the best chances. Each has the best chances.
Yeah, I think there's something too in there that I was just thinking about as you were sharing that, you know, really focusing on what is the material being learned, whatever it is, mean to the students. And it just, you know, I was just looking at this the other day, that the word education, the Latin root ducare for educate, really, you know, it means to lead out. It means to bring out from the child. And I'm curious, Michelle, how you would, I'm thinking about those teachers that are like the teachers that kind of don't know what to do when there's an aha moment in a child. You know, they're not used to, they're looking to see, oh, they get the numbers, they get the letters. They're not looking to see, oh, this child is lit up. You know, what would your advice be to those teachers about how to respond when they have that, oh, maybe there is something here. I just don't know. I don't know how to take that aha and do anything with it. What would you recommend?
Well, first, such a teacher or in such a lesson will have to let go a bit and just teach a bit less, because if they have all this learning material to do in this lesson, there's no time. They will see, it will be interruption in class. So we need to begin with planning on teaching a bit less. So if a child comes up with such an idea or something, we can say, well, that's great. So sometimes we don't have what to say at the moment. Then when we think about it later, it's important to think about it later at home, and maybe next time to say, you know what you said, I really liked it. Or they can invite the child to write about it. If it's a child in elementary school, I'd invite him to write even a sentence or a paragraph about it, totally freely. And then they can submit it to the teacher, and the teacher can say, well, can recommend how to express better. In relation to grammar and vocabulary. And this is a learning opportunity, and the child will be motivated because he's trying to express his own ideas. So we will be motivated to learn the language. If it's in middle school or high school, then again, the child can write about it, or I would suggest if they have ideas to write even on notepads and hang them on the wall. Just as to stimulate thinking, because in the next class, maybe another student will say, yeah, the thing that is hung on the wall, it reminds me of something and it gives me another idea. Just as stimulating conversations, you don't always have to develop it at the moment. It's an idea.
I think that that's a really important part of what you're saying, is that it's iterative and collaborative. And so what you said that really stood out to me was that the teacher might need to teach less and plan less for each specific lesson to allow for these opportunities of creativity. And I think even as you're saying it, when you talk about the conversation that can come from it, or the opportunity to express, as you say, is the final stage, to me, and I think really as you talk about creativity in general, that expression can take many different forms. It doesn't have to be a written form and to be able to express what students learn. So I'm curious, what are some of the ways that you've seen these expressions come out of the learning?
Okay. So for example, a teacher can introduce learning material and then give a questionnaire. What did you find interesting about the learning material? What educational product would you like to do about it? Just this. And if the children had the ideas, it will be important to add them in. And then the teacher takes it home and thinks about it and recommends to each child how to develop the educational product he wanted to develop. That could be a game, a PowerPoint, a song, everything. And the teacher would recommend how to elevate it. Elevate is a great word because children don't like to develop or to review or to reread, but elevate is really a good word to use. And then they can have a lesson that can also be online, that's also good for online learning, in which the teacher or the children will present, each will present their product. And the teacher will emphasize regarding each product, what it contributes to learning the subject that we are learning right now. So he's weaving all this social constructivist learning, and eventually the learning would be much more meaningful. And they have learned the same as if the teacher would have just lectured, they would have learned the same maybe. I think that way they would learn more and in a more meaningful way.
I think one thing that I'm curious about is you yourself said that you often were told and kind of took on this persona of not being creative, of not being an artist, of not being a writer. And so it's a two-part question. What did you do to really develop that? I know you had some mentors and people who helped you, your mom and others, and your uncle who supported you in that journey. And then the other side of that is, what do you then do to the other students that you come across who say the same thing, who you hear saying, oh, Michelle, I'm not creative. I can't be creative. I can't express myself in creative ways. I'm curious, what are both sides of that coin look like for you?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So I believe I became more creative also by working with children. Somewhere along learning to paint and working with children, I connected with my inner child. This is a journey that it takes time, and you have to want to go through it, and you need patience and openness. How to deliver that to people who want to go through that? I would say I gave it a lot of thought building my mini course. And somewhere along the way, I realized that my paintings and art, they inspire creativity. They have a role. They also have a meditative role, like relaxing, but they also and giving energy. So for example, in the mini course, there is, we do an instant meditation. It's instant because due to my paintings. But it's very energizing, and I mold into it all my experience and also my creativity to give it to people to experience that. the paintings do that, the visuality of them and the poems.
Yeah, and we'll have to, in the show notes on our site, we'll have to make sure maybe we can get one of your paintings, a picture of it, so people can see. Well, even just the cover of your book has your artwork on it.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as you were, you mentioned that, you know, the painting came out of almost necessity of you're creating these wonderful stories, and like you said, you need teaching aids. Can you tell us a little bit about, for you, you know, you the teacher learning to nurture your own creative process in that, you know, starting out with drawing and starting to get more maybe advanced with your painting? How did that process unfold for you, and what kinds of things did you do yourself to make that happen? That thing that you thought you'd never do.
Okay, so at some point when I was a child, someone must have said to me that a painting I did wasn't good. Because I don't know why I thought for 20 years that I can't paint. And this is something that happens to everyone, every child. Every person in the world has a story like that. This is stifling creativity for life. Well, I think the kids encouraged me, my students, because they liked what I drew, so I continued, and I needed to do that for them. And then I simply dived into it. But today what I insist is that with my students also, you see that a student is not happy with something that he did and that squashes it, that's it, end of things. And this is something I never accepted for my students. We can always make it better. We can always do another that is more on the right track. For me, a mistake is just a mistake. And the next take will be more right on the track.
I like the fearlessness in that of, you know, I just do it. I just dove in and saw those mistakes as just part of the process. Like you said, they're not mistakes, they're mistakes almost. And, you know, I even wonder, and I'm curious if you've seen this in some of the teachers you've worked with or educators. I think about myself as a teacher and about how early in my time teaching, you know, I really wanted to teach in a way that fostered creativity. I just didn't, you know, I wasn't into the whole, I've got this structure that can't be changed based on my students. And I think a lot of educators, like what I experienced was that I actually kind of got, you know, if something didn't work well, I got kind of put down by administration or other teachers for trying something creative that, you know, when you do things creative as a teacher, it doesn't always go the way everyone's planned. Have you encountered teachers who you almost need to coach them or encourage them, or who are afraid to be more creative in their lessons? And if so, what advice have you given them, or even just in this moment, what advice would you give them when it's about their own feelings of failure trying something new as a teacher?
Well, first of all, they are part of the system. And it's very difficult to be just the only teacher who wants to teach like that. But I see many teachers wishing to teach like that nowadays. You see that they would reach me out on LinkedIn, but it would be more difficult to talk with their principal. I would say go to my website and search for tools to encourage the whole school to embrace creativity. I understand this is it's important. It's very important to be part of such an environment and to create this environment around you. it's very difficult to become co-learners with the children. But I believe this is also research-based, that the students appreciate teachers who become co-learners with them. I think kids today, they're so bright, and they would appreciate a teacher would try that thing, new strategies out. Eventually, when using a caring and communicative approach, it would only bring good. You know, about mistakes, even when I was young, my mom and my uncle, they were always very supportive. They let me mistake. They said, Michelle is wise. We understand, we're gonna let her, she has good ideas. And I never embarrassed them. So I learned a lot. And I do a lot of mistakes now too. I mean, I'm on social media trying to help. I even have mistakes in my English, although not in my books. My books are totally English proof. But I do a lot of mistakes, but I never do a mistake twice. So I learn a lot. And this is what we want to give kids. That it's okay to mistake. It's not okay not to learn from the mistake.
Right, I think that's a really powerful difference.
Happens, it's just a setback. I would use it to grow even further.
I think that's the key right there, is that when we model for the students, it's almost like what you're talking about in terms of when we make mistakes and we say, oops, like, okay, I'm gonna learn from that. I'm gonna grow from that. I won't make that mistake the second time. In many ways, that's much more powerful for a student than to always feel like you have to have the right answer and to never let them know that you don't know. And so I think that what you're saying there in many ways is modeling for the students what it is to make mistakes so that they can try, and through that try, find their creativity.
Yeah. I very much admire kids who sometimes during class they say, I didn't understand, or I admire that. It's okay. We have moments like that. We want to understand better. A teacher should set the rules in class that the words wrong and nonsense do not exist. And to give them sentence starters like, good idea, I would like to add, or I like your thinking, it made me think. But we need to give them those sentence starters.
Again, it comes down to that modeling part of it, right? So the sentence starters is another way of really teaching our students what it is to speak, to think, to grow, to find those inner gifts that you talked about. And so I know that for you, a lot of it is the creativity that can come from all circumstances and the fostering of that creativity. I know on your website and elsewhere, you've talked about the checklist that people can have that keep them focused on creativity. And so I'm curious, what elements do you think really go into fostering creativity in general, both for the teacher and the student?
I would go back to my 5 E's method. The going further into ideas and developing them. And we would need to give the students guidance on how to develop their thoughts, how to research further. And the persistence, this is about persistence, to continue to think more about their product, how they're going to develop it. And listening to others, maybe someone has a good idea for us to help us. It's social.
Yeah, I think that all goes hand in hand with, like you said, that the fostering part of it and the bringing out the gifts in our students. And so when you think about where education can go and how we incorporate what you do and the Raising Creative Thinkers, where do you hope and what do you envision for education, both now as we are coming out of a worldwide pandemic, as well as the future, as we just think generally, what do you think needs to happen in education to raise the next generation of creative thinkers?
So we need to start from the end. And that means that the PISA tests need to have creativity characteristics in them. Checking those kind of characteristics. And this is very difficult because it's difficult to examine the spark in children's eyes. But I believe there are ways. And if teachers would, even in elementary school, tell a story and watch art together with the kids and converse with them and let them draw and color and paint and then mold those ideas that came through into educational products, then in the meanwhile, students will engage better. They will learn to rely on themselves, to have self-esteem, that their thinking counts. And they will grow more into people, adults that count on themselves to contribute to society and to be contributed. Because today we're not so sure that there is readiness for the world after school.
Yeah.
Whereas kids are very bright, they have it in them. If we would continue to just instruct, then we didn't hear the child, we don't know anything about him. This is something I wanted to say too, that as a teacher, we sometimes need to look at the class, to see the individuals, because if you're so into learning, teaching the learning material, we don't see the class.
Mm.
So sometimes just watching, observing.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, I think at least education in the US, a lot of the conversation might be about feedback, meaning teachers giving students feedback and almost what I feedback about their work. And it's almost, you know, the message to teachers, at least in the US where feedback is something that's discussed, it's feedback going both ways, right? It's that even if they're 6 years old, they might not be writing up feedback and give it to you specifically, but if you're paying attention, if you're watching, if you're, like you said, giving them some sentence starters, giving them a little bit of a something to start the conversation.
It needs to be reciprocal.
Yes.
And if you're a teacher like that, and when they come up with ideas, then you have the credit to give feedback.
Right. I'm writing down that word reciprocal. I like that word in this context.
Yeah. So I was thinking about a teacher I had in high school.
Yeah.
She was a literature teacher. Uh-huh. And in the first class, she came inside and she didn't do nothing. She just watched us for a moment. And then she spotted this kid that was at the back corner, like sprawled on his desk, half asleep. And she connected with him. He was her best friend. And she spotted two others, and she made them, made in a good way, not by force, but they became our actors. And we played all Macbeth at class. We didn't read. They put their sweaters on their heads, and that was costume. And they were the actors enacting Macbeth. And that was the best year. And those were kids that you wouldn't think they would even engage in a literature lesson, but she saw something in them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've heard it said in different ways, this kind of phrase that, you know, the people that you're working, the people that you're in charge of or that you are watching over, they're going to be limited by how you see them. And so I hear that the importance for the educator is that any limitation on terms of what you expect a student to be able to achieve kind of needs to be pulled away a little bit. And that, you know, and you're saying to trust almost that, you know, the children will fill that space in. They will give you, they will give you what you need, which I think is really a very refreshing message, especially in a time, again, you know, in the United States and in many parts of the world where there's a lot of testing, there's a lot of memorization, there's a lot of categorical learning, which isn't, you know, isn't useless, but that there's this missed opportunity to develop, you know, maybe the whole child and to go into areas and learning that surpass what would have happened otherwise.
Repetitive learning is important because to be creative in a subject, one must really know the subject profoundly. You know, I even taking a test to organize all that you have learned, to start drawing on your own insights based on it. This is what I think a test is. But it has to be accompanied by fostering the creativity, by original products of the kids based on their ideas.
Well, and that goes to just even the teacher that you were talking about, right? If the teacher had come in and said, read Macbeth, there'll be a test on Tuesday, unlikely that that student would have ever been reached or had that experience, and unlikely that you would necessarily remember that class for the right reason. So I think that speaks to the importance of adapting to our students and allowing space for the creativity to come out and to be part of the experience and not an end result or not an accident that happened to happen along the way, but to actually be part of the experience.
And then we can direct them, because if we hear them and we get to know them better, then we can direct them better. And I think a lot of at-risk behaviors would not happen.
Again, because exactly like you're saying, that when you connect with a student and you look for their gift and you try to bring it out, why would they still have the same need to misbehave?
Yeah, and they will also have meaning. They will know what they're worth, what their gifts are. They will want to succeed in fulfilling those gifts. So it gives meaning and purpose.
And you then mentioned too.
You then mentioned we can too. Teach directness. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I mean, this. Then we can teach the directness and planning, all those social emotional skills. And also, if we embrace such an attitude, then we can teach proactive behavior. This is what we model, what we do in class.
And those are those lifelong skills. So you mentioned that beyond the classroom, I heard you say, or after the classroom. And so I'm curious if you could speak to what did you mean when you say that these skills can help after the classroom or beyond outside of the classroom?
Well, as adults, professionally, well, today work, we live in a global village. We connect and work with people from everywhere. And that should be constructive anyway. And we, but also for society, you know, in the past few days, there was a lot being talked about racism, and we should focus on the good behavior. And for that, we need to model that.
Yeah. I like the emphasis in your work with adults on modeling. And I think also, you know, when adults model, there's always the first kids that start to model with the adult, and then the other kids see other kids modeling. And it kind of creates there's a natural humanistic effect to creativity, to curiosity that.
If the adults acts in a proactive behavior, in a caring, then he should expect to be treated the same. He has the right to expect that. And it will also happen naturally if you treat the children as little intellectuals.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, this has been such a fascinating conversation, Michelle. And really, you know, it's kind of, we've had some, you know, other guests on the podcast talking about project-based learning, about mastery learning, about different, about coaching. And I think this focus on creativity is, you know, there's no jargon to it. It's just creativity. And I can see where these principles that you're sharing, like you said, they're lifelong. They're not just in school, but lifelong, and giving this to kids in school is a real gift. And if I think back to, like you had mentioned, one of the teachers you had in your life, if I think back to the teachers I had in my life when I was younger, you know, I can remember the teachers where it didn't work well and I was not behaving well. And I can think of the teachers who, you know, still taught the material, but made room for creativity. And it just so happens that those were the classes where there weren't very many behavioral issues and where I can remember really fitting in and really enjoying it. So I think there's, you know, creativity can seem like a simple thing, and it kind of is, but it's that simple thing that you use all the time. So is there any, just as we're getting to the end of our time here today, Michelle, is there anything about your work or about creativity or about, anything we've discussed that, or that you haven't had a chance to discuss that you'd like to share with the listeners or to express for folks? And Josh, you might have a question there too. I just wanted to open that for Michelle. She's given us so much so far. Is there anything else you want to share?
Just, you know, just what you said, it is simple. It's really simple. We're so much raised to be at this analytic mind, critical, analytic, focused on the target, and we need to make ourselves an environment in which we can also be at this open mood. It's a mood and it's a mode of operation too, where we can just be imaginative and raise ideas. And every idea is welcome. We'll check them later. There will be time to evaluate and think critically when you return to the this closed mode. But we need to and this also means that environment at school, or where we work, we should make it like put some flowers and a nice curtain. It's very important.
I like
and
that.
I think that, you know, I've been sitting here reflecting, Michelle, that everything you're saying about being open to creativity, we wouldn't be having this podcast interview with you if it wasn't for exactly that, right? I met a few months ago and started discussing what education might look like and decided let's be creative ourselves and to start an Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast. And through the articles that we wrote, that's how we met you. And so here you are on our podcast, you know, weeks, months later after just this chance encounter that happened because of trying to foster our own creativity and bringing in others who are wishing to do that as well. So I'm just reflecting on that and want to just point that out, that it speaks to exactly what you've been saying, Michelle, which is that when we're open to creativity, when we're open to possibility, amazing things can happen, like being able to talk with you in this exact moment.
And there are many people like us who wish for such an education.
And we're going to try to talk to them all. Well, I just want to thank you so much, Michelle, for your time, for your energy, for your thoughts. I will leave the last word to you in a moment. But again, I just think that this has been such a powerful experience and such a wonderful opportunity. And again, I want to just give an opportunity for listeners to reach out to you on raisingcreativethinkers.com. Michelle Korenfeld on LinkedIn. We'll put on our website, we'll give information about your books and ways to get in touch with you. But I just want to, again, if there's any other optimism that you would like to amplify, Michelle, we'll leave that to you here as we finish out.
Well, I would just say that we need to let go a bit, to let creativity in. And this is something that happened in the past several months. We let go a bit. We found that we can teach children without all those boundaries that were developed throughout years, and we can find new ways. And another important thing is that teachers were very isolated, each in their classroom. And now I think this isolation is a bit faded, and this is good. And there's empathy for teachers. Parents that say, oh, rescue, I can't teach my kids, that's too much. We need you, we want you, we love you. That's real good. Because we need to believe in the teachers. Everyone should always learn new strategies and develop and amplify their good sides. But this belief in teacher and empathy, this is also a very good start.
I love it. And I think on that note, we should in fact let it go so that we can continue to develop and foster our own ideas and creativity and energy.
And Michelle, just for those that are listening, we'll link your book and your website, but just tell us again the name of your book that's on Amazon and your website, just so folks can hear that.
My book is Creative Children Like the Animals of the World. Mm-hmm. It's available on Amazon, and my website, Raising Creative Thinkers, offers tools and materials and inspiration, inspiring blog posts, and you're most welcome.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that Michelle gave you some food for thought about how to raise creative thinkers and infuse creativity into all aspects of learning and education. You can learn more about Michelle and the awesome things she does at raisingcreativethinkers.com. For more information on the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, visit our website, www.amplifyingoptimism.com. Join us next week where we explore how to decrease teacher burnout by focusing on mental health and collaborative initiatives with our guest, Dana Thomas, the founder of Happy Teacher Revolution. Keep on amplifying optimism in education and beyond.